My name is Will, and I, like Mulder from The X-Files, want to believe. So I've embarked on a journey of discovery. I've talked to people deeply entrenched in the spiritual world. I've thrown myself into weird and wonderful experiences. I've even joined a coven of witches, all in the interest of finding something, anything, that will prove that there's something beyond this physical three-dimensional world we all live in. This is The Skeptic Metaphysician.
Welcome back. As always, I'm Will. On this week's show, we are going to explore a term that you've probably heard of before, but you may not fully understand. The term is Kundalini. A few weeks ago, I was fortunate enough to attend a spiritual retreat of sorts called Peace Inside Live. Though this retreat was virtual in nature due to obvious reasons, the platform didn't limit us to non-experiential experiences. Sounds weird, I know, but I hope you understand what I mean. We weren't lectured to the entire time, but rather we were able to experience things that most in-person retreats sometimes only dream of. One of those experiences was led by my guest this week. It was a Kundalini activation activity, and it was something that took me completely by surprise. Though I wasn't, and honestly still am not sure of what to expect, to say that what I did experience was interesting is not giving it enough of a due. We'll talk about that experience in a little bit, but first, should probably make this a lot less about me and actually introduce my guest. Her name is Alexandra Michelle, and she is a spiritual teacher and transmitter whose work is based on the values of awakening and liberation. Alexandra transmits raw Kundalini to awaken your own internal energy and initiate spiritual emergence. She's a mentor, a healer, a published author, Reiki master teacher, and an accredited KAP facilitator. And that is Kundalini Activation Process Facilitator. And in fact, she's been selected and sanctioned by the founder of the KAP to become one of the first facilitators in the U.S., I'm thrilled to welcome to the show, Alexandra Michelle. Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm so excited to be here.
So much to talk about, specifically because I've experienced what you do. So before we get started, first and foremost, a lot of folks that are listening probably have heard the term Kundalini, but maybe can't quite place what that term actually refers to. Can you give us a breakdown of what that is?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think starting from the most basic experience that people have had is when there is a moment of utter fulfillment, well-being, excitement, achievement, you win that award, you get that straight A, you get accepted to your dream school or your dream whatever, you know, your beloved partner says yes. All of those moments, you see an exquisite sunset, all of those moments releases a spike of Kundalini and you have a blooming of goodness, of consciousness, of awareness, of bliss that comes about you, then that is an experience of Kundalini. It's an energy in yoga, in the Vedic traditions, it's known to be an energy that is a reservoir of consciousness that lives at the base of the spine. And then through yogic practices, one can release that energy and it begins to ascend up the Sushumna. That's in its most basic terms. Of course, things don't always go so linearly for anybody, let alone a devoted yogi. So in general, the idea here is that you can choose to raise this energy and experience increasingly more consistent levels of bliss, consciousness, and awareness. So Kundalini is known as prana, as chi, as the Holy Spirit, Shekinah. All human beings awaken spiritually through the release of this energy. And the pranic energy is something that you can feel, but inside of that pranic energy, there is the consciousness itself, which is Kundalini Shakti. So once Kundalini is awake and active in your system, then the spiritual seeker is sort of led by a force other than their own ego. And so that's when signs and synchronicities start to happen a lot, when people activate their Kundalini and all of a sudden they're led to this class or that teacher or this book, or for some inexplicable reason, I've got to go to Greece or Peru or India, and the path reveals itself. It is quite scientific. There's Kundalini Vidya, which is the branch of science that understands exactly how this process unfurls in the human body. And one of my favorite ways of thinking about it is all human beings digest food the same way. All human beings have organs that digest food and assimilate nutrients. All human beings have kundalini, and true spiritual emergence is realized in the same way through kundalini process. Hindus have kundalini, obviously, but so do Christians, so do Jews, Muslims, Taoists, Buddhists, Sufis, everyone. It's all the same.
You have said a mouthful. A lot of that, I went, okay. So a couple of things that jumped to mind. You mentioned that it was an energy that was akin to when your beloved said yes, or when you have these great euphoric moments. I've had guests on the show before that have talked about these experiences that they had that was pure, unadulterated love, just this feeling of euphoria. I'm assuming what they're feeling maybe is that kundalini energy, probably the case.
Probably. It's most likely the case. It leads to non-dual awareness. And so when you transcend duality, which is our judgment of good and bad, there emerges this unconditional love. And in yoga, it's really equanimity bliss. And so the ecstasy, the euphoria, that happens in peak moments. But then as you integrate this energy through practice, you level off into this sort of eternal sweetness where everything seems to be just as it was meant to be. It reveals the essence, the isness of everything. And so, yeah, mature kundalini process reveals the non-dual reality.
Whoa, that sounds like exactly what I need. So when you say that you do these practices, you release this kundalini energy, is this something that I assume it takes a while for it to actually activate? I know that we went through an experience a few weeks ago. You led us through an experience meant to activate the kundalini. But I assume that this is something you have to do on a regular basis, or is it kind of like you flip a switch and suddenly you are in bliss? No?
It depends. It depends on who you are. In general, it's extremely rare to have one opening and it's stabilized, because there's a lot of different parts of our consciousness that have to be integrated. It's also very common for people to have an initial release and spend 2 weeks in bliss and then come back and go back into dualistic perception. Yeah. And so there's a lot of different things that determine how the release and the process is going to affect you. When you receive a transmission from somebody who's able to give a transmission, in India, and traditionally this is known as Shaktipat. So that's like when the guru touches your third eye and all of a sudden you go into samadhi and have that opening. But then the practitioner, the aspirant, has to integrate that and has to maintain it and learn to do it themselves. Most people don't. Most people are not empowered to take that initial opening and keep it going.
Right.
So kundalini activation process, a lot of my students practice weekly and they open gradually. If you study the energetic anatomy, you not only have the seven chakras and the main astral tubes, the nadis, meridians, but you have upwards of 300 chakras all over the body and within the aura. And then you have nadis and channels that are connecting all of them. So the kundalini flows throughout the system. And with that goes certain attitudes that are helpful. So kundalini not only releases this bliss, this awareness, but it also flows throughout the system and it heals and purifies. A good kundalini teacher will empower their students to be prepared for the healing, clearing process. Mm. And so very simple tenets can be applied that are really well known, right? Non-attachment, non-aversion, surrender, right. Allowing, compassion, love, compassion through the process.
Mm. These are things that I've been trying to achieve for a long time, especially over the past year. Everyone's been going through specifically hard or especially hard times. It's easy for me to say, this is what I want, has not been quite so easy to accomplish. I'm getting from what you're saying that someone who actually practices this activation process on a regular basis is possibly eventually slowly looking to, I hate to say the word activate, but activate those feelings. Or do you try to kind of, a good friend of mine while said, I'm going to fake it until I make it, right? Is that the suggestion? We just fake it until we feel it? Or how would you recommend that happens?
No, in my opinion, so there's what's known as the long path and the short path. You have to go down the long path before you can go down the short path. And so I think a lot of us get glimpses, right? We have that opening into love or bliss or peace or whatever it is, either from reading it and then our minds sort of epiphanize this realization, or because you've had an experience either through some euphoric moment or even through a loss. There is this opening into what you described in your intro, which I love so much, that something greater, that something more. And so a lot of us get that glimpse and then we spiritually bypass because we think we know. And we just sort of bear down and muscle our way through all of our human fluctuations because we think we know what we're looking for. Right. I don't think that's efficient, and I don't think it's kind to ourselves. I aspire to non-duality, which is known as Advaita in the Vedic traditions, but I take a more tantric approach, which is the inclusion of everything. I feel grief, beautiful, an expression of humanity, God consciousness, and I take it into the heart. So through metabolizing our emotional and mental experiences with unconditional love, compassion, turning towards it, taking it in. And sometimes that can look like I'm having this experience. I'm going to set the timer for 15 minutes. It can look like working with a friend or a therapist, somatic experiencing, writing in your journal. I know more creative people that turn it into art or into a dance. There's a sort of intentional ritualization of embracing this human part. And so once we've metabolized all of these things that before we started opening into self-care, self-healing, spiritual realization development, our world told us to compartmentalize. Why don't you have a glass of wine? Why don't you watch a movie? It's not that bad. Suck it up. Crying is weak, whatever it might be, right? So you're pivoting away from that self-denial into self-inclusion. And so that's the integration. Okay, so that's the long path. And once you've metabolized it, once you have a degree of self-discovery, personality self-realization, then you can pivot to the short path where you go, okay, I don't need to keep digging through the trash, as it were. Right. And I can turn my awareness to God consciousness all the time. And so that's where the Buddhist practice comes in of equanimity, where you start to say, okay, these feelings, this discomfort inside my body, I'm going to regard it with equanimity. It's just a sensation.
And equanimity, it seems to be a buzzword these days, right? The apps like Calm and Headspace are using that term. They're throwing it around to speak to what you just talked about, but to get to it in a kind of a different way than what you just described, which is interesting to me, because what you're saying seems to be more of a, you mentioned the long path, something that's more permanent as opposed to a quick fix. Yeah. Oh, wow. Where to go from here? I've got so many questions. I do want to eventually get to how you became who you are, right? How you were able to turn to this type of practice for literally who you are. But before we do that, I think I'd love to talk about the activation process itself. On the retreat, it was virtual. You had us all lie down on a yoga mat. And through the technology, you had to make sure that you could see us. So we had to make sure that our camera, you could see our bodies as we were lying there. And then you played a series of songs, some music, while we made sure that we had kept our eyes closed. Now, since that day, I've looked into what you do, and I've noticed that you do some either pointing at maybe chakras or something, or gestures or something. So it leads me to believe that it's not the music that activates the kundalini, but yet what you're doing. And perhaps the music is something that keeps us occupied. Is that really kind of right? Okay. So then
you don't need the music at all. It's literally just to help your mind sort of let go into the experience.
Gotcha. So is it more difficult to do something like this on the virtual stage? You would think that in person, you might be able to access the chakras easier, or whatever it is that you do. As a Reiki master teacher, I'm a Reiki practitioner myself. I'm level 2. So I know about attunements and all that kind of stuff. We've had Reiki master teachers on the show before. So I'm familiar with that process, including hand positions and symbols and all that kind of stuff. But, and I know you probably, telling us exactly what you do is not the right thing to do here, but what is it that can transmit that activation process just as easily through technology as in person? How's that work?
Well, first of all, I'm all about transparency. I have no secrets. First of all, I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. Some
part of this is the mystery. And I have people that show up to my classes all the time that don't feel a thing for whatever reason. And I could speculate and say they're not karmically ripe or whatever, but I don't know that to be true. And I don't know that the seed of the activation wasn't planted and it will bloom either obviously or subtly at any time henceforth. The truth of the matter is that Kundalini awakening is absolutely natural. It's absolutely natural. And everybody has a degree of Kundalini running through their system all the time. Otherwise, we would be dead.
Miserable.
we would literally not be alive. It's our life force energy. So the reason why it can transmit at a distance is because fundamentally we're sharing a quantum field and it's all done through intention. So by virtue of you turning on your Zoom and having your mat and being here together, the field is already established. The energy of Kundalini is within you already. I'm merely holding a frequency with my mind intention and also with my physical body, which I've trained to hold this frequency and treat with relative care to maintain the conductivity. And that which is already within you is ready and willing to become stimulated. And so it's almost like a tuning fork. I just hold the frequency and then that which is within you starts to entrain to that frequency. And so for some people, they're really shut down. It's not safe for them to feel this joy, bliss, this surge of energy. It's either foreign to them because they've been brought up in a culture that demonizes anything other than religious practices, or the idea of claiming a spiritual authority directly inside is confronting to them, so they'll shut it down. Other things, some people just hold on to stress and they hold on to everything inside, and that creates contraction, compaction in the energy field. And so the Kundalini might not have as clear of a space through which to flow. But through coming to the classes, through receiving the transmission routinely again and again, it starts to permeate those layers and
I'm so curious. I know that during the session that I was in, is it possible that when you feel it, it actually, I guess there's no way other than say it, but just to say it. So when I went through it, my experience wasn't so much, it didn't feel so much as bliss, but rather extreme sadness and release. Felt great afterwards, but during it, it wasn't so great. So is that normal?
It's extremely normal. The true main quality of Kundalini is healing, clearing, purifying. With her consciousness, Shakti is a feminine energy personified in the feminine. So she, Kundalini Shakti, has her own intelligence and knows you. So that which is ready to be purified, released, healed, cleansed will be targeted. And so going back to those sort of paradigms that are very popular, surrendering, allowing, the real pain is in your ego saying this is somehow wrong. I ascribe a negative connotation to this feeling. And of course, it's unpleasant, but it's actually the mind registers what is being cleared and then it goes.
And just to be fair, I didn't find it unpleasant so much as it was uncomfortable at the time, just because it wasn't what I expected. I expected bliss and instead I felt distress, but it was a good feeling. Like when you have a good cry, that's kind of how it feels. It felt, right? And I'll admit, I mean, tears came to my eyes. There were a point where I literally had stopped myself from sobbing when they were introducing this. And I know people that have gone through the process and said, this is the real thing. You need to experience it. You never know what your body's going to do. I didn't know what to expect. But when they said, make sure you have plenty of room around you, my thought was, well, my body's going to go into convulsions or something. Is it strictly in an internal process, or does it actually cause the body to move?
Both. Like I mentioned, the network of channels that permeate your entire body and the aura around you will sometimes become animated and then the physical body will follow. And so in Kundalini science, those are known as kriyas. Kriyas simply mean to change, to move. So there can be physical kriyas such as shaking or sort of spasming. And so those sorts of movements tend to indicate that Kundalini is fluidifying the contractions in the field. And those can be truly involuntary. And again, this energy is yours and it's completely natural and completely safe. So you maintain consciousness. So at any time, if you want to stop anything, all you have to do is open your eyes, take a deep breath, and sit up. You know, you can stop the process. So when I say involuntary, you're aware of what's happening, but the body moves. And the more you allow it and surrender it, the deeper the clearing, the deeper the work happens. You can also have emotional kriyas. So you can have crying. And my advice would be, don't stop yourself from sobbing. Go into it.
Too late, but
totally. And you can have aggression, anxiety, screaming, laughing, just the most outrageous hilarity. The cosmic joke, you know, can sort of be released and realized, and this extraordinary laughter comes through. So all of those are movements, kriyas, and that is completely natural and normal.
Wow. Okay. So how about, I would assume that this would also then pertain to images in your mind. I personally had some interesting, vivid, I don't want to say dreams because I wasn't sleeping, but, you know, visuals that ultimately culminated, and I don't know if you remember when we shared afterwards, in seeing myself in my grave. Facing up while people were throwing dirt into the grave. So I saw my own death. Although I didn't see my death, I saw my burial, which is different. And I didn't know what to make of that, where my partner actually felt nothing at all. So it was really interesting to see the differences. And from hearing everyone else talking, my experience was very different than anybody else's. I assume that's normal.
It is. It's extremely normal. And you're not the only person to have had some sort of death scenario play out. Some people feel as though they are dead. And I've actually had this, for sure, 5 times, maybe more, where the person receiving goes into this non-dual state. And so what's really being experienced is the temporary suspension of the ego, and it feels like a death. So in Vedic science, there is a term known as kleshas. So kleshas are all of the things the mind does to protect and prevent itself from being deconstructed, right? So that the true self, the eternal self, non-dual samadhi, can be realized, right? And so one of them is fear of death. So have you ever had a bad habit or a grudge or a negative thought pattern that you know it's not serving you and you vow you're going to let it go and you do your new moon ritual and all of the stuff, but there it hangs out, right?
Boy, do I.
Yeah. The mind is afraid of death. The mind knows that by letting that habit go, it's done. So there's sheaths of protection. So anyway, I don't know exactly what happened for you, but these 5 people that I was just referencing, they said, I experienced my own death and it was peace and it was fine. And it was so healing for them because that helped to remove a layer of their fear of death. And then for you, what it sounds like is the psychic imagery is always symbolic. And so I'm sure on some level, on some subconscious level, your ego was experiencing a form of death. And so your psychic imagery reflected that in that symbol. I don't know that to be true, but I imagine that's what happened.
Well, it makes perfect sense. I didn't feel distraught in the grave. I didn't feel terror or anything. It felt fine. It's hard to explain. It's hard to explain, but interesting. When someone comes to you for the first time and says, I want to experience the Kundalini activation process, is there any sort of expectation that you can give them? Do you typically say you could feel nothing at all, or you could just, your life could change in one day?
Yeah, I give them a spiel. I never ever promise that their life could change in one day, because it might seem to have changed, but then there will be a calibration happening. And sure. So I think I'm on a mission to be really realistic about the spiritual awakening process, because I had to go through the full-on non-glamorous death rebirth, and it takes a certain level of, it's almost desperate, the commitment, you know, it comes from the bottom of your soul. And I think that there can be instantaneous improvement. I think that this process is extremely efficient and extremely fast, especially when I have people that say, I've been attempting to heal myself for so long, and talk therapy and this, that, and the other hasn't yielded the same results. And so, first of all, I want to acknowledge that those people have already prepared themselves, right? It's all good. It's all cumulative. Every effort every effort on the level of intention is putting you in the right direction for where you want to go. As for somebody who just comes to this straight off the bat, I have my spiel, which is, this is what Kundalini is. We've already talked about this. It's very simple. It's safe and natural. It belongs to you. It's your own natural life force energy. I basically hold this frequency like a tuning fork, and then from within yourself, the energy can arise and you can expect anything. It's going to be different every time. But the main five manifestations is involuntary physical movements that can also become inspired movements. So not quite involuntary, but it's like, you know that you need to sit up, you know that you need to stand up, stretch, whatever, right? So physical movements, emotional movements, emotional catharsis, visuals of any kind, energetic feelings, so vibrations, tingling, bubbling, hot and cold, electromagnetism, feelings of bliss and pleasure, which can include orgasmic sensations. And I always say, and indeed, it may feel as though nothing has happened. It might be exceedingly subtle.
Okay, so interestingly enough, now as I'm hearing you say all these things, my partner said she did not feel anything. However, I think it was like the third song, she felt so aggravated by the song that she literally had to stand up and walk out of the room because she could not stand that song.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of these songs had a big electronic techno beat to them, and she's not really that type of person that likes these types of things. It puts her on edge, but she really, like, she had to force herself to lay back down and try to experience it something. So, A, I'm wondering if that was her experience, that aggravation was what she was experiencing, and B, maybe she closed herself off at that point where she didn't feel anything after that because she was so closed off.
It's probably both. I mean, the truth is I accept, more or less, I accept anybody to the open classes, and then there's opportunities to go deeper. This is an advanced practice. It's suitable for beginners, but this is very deep. It's confrontational, and the music that I choose is chosen on purpose. Some people get really activated, especially if they have a kinetic response, a physical response. So those sort of the peak song, the techno song, or the drums or the whatever, that elicits a big response. And the other intention is the emotionality of each song. So I intentionally choose songs to make you angry or make you cry. It helps people to facilitate that emotional release.
It did a really good job. There are points where you used, to your point, lots of different types of music. You used techno, you used what seemed to be like a tribal sound to it. Also, it was a wide gamut. It wasn't just that techno beat that she was averse to. Is it the music or is it you? We got that answer. But the music seems to facilitate it also, because we do have an emotional attachment to music, or music moves us in a certain way. So I'm assuming you use that to motivate in that way.
Yeah. It creates the container.
How long have you been practicing this Kundalini activation process?
Well, I had a Kundalini awakening in 2000. Well, who knows? I mean, the truth is, with Kundalini, people like to say, oh, I felt the heat, the rise up the spine, or, oh, I started to have kriyas. That's when it started. But like I said, everybody has Kundalini all the time. And we all have those moments where it rises and then falls again. But then there can be a really subtle release for some people. So what I tend to think is that Kundalini is the energy that powers the awakening. And that's why when people come to it after doing all of this preparatory work, suddenly they have the juice to facilitate the deeper movements towards healing, expansion, awareness, right? I think I might have had a Kundalini awakening starting around 2011, 2012, right when I was starting to graduate college. And I know that because I was emotionally triggered. I'm high functioning, but by all accounts, I had a breakdown, a serious existential breakdown. And I believe that that was partially due to Kundalini. And so that was brief. That was probably 6 months. And then I was inspired to look more deeply into the truth, into the nature of everything. And I was reading the Tao Te Ching, and I was studying everything. I started to study astrology. I started to dabble in meditation. I started to sort of say I was oriented, right? And then I had that dramatic Kundalini awakening, actually, as I was getting my second degree Reiki attunement. And I felt, it was like a freight train. I felt this intense energy at the base of my spine, and it rose up. And I had the block still at my throat there's three granthis, which are gates in the body. So you have one at the root, you have one at the heart, and you have one at the back of the head, middle of the head, neck area. And so I was open until my neck. So when the energy rose, my head was thrown back and my mouth opened because I wasn't open so it could go out of the top. And so that was really unmistakable. It was like, okay, for sure. You know?
Wow.
But I didn't know for sure that it was Kundalini. I mean, I didn't understand the gravity of it. I was familiar with the term. And then when I would sit down to meditate for a few weeks, it would do that. It would come up and throw my head back, and it was really clear and obvious. And then since then, I've been going through the renovation, restoration process, the healing, clearing, and the orientation towards non-duality. So in short, probably since 2011, 12.
Okay.
About 10 years.
We've been connected on social media since that experience. And I saw on your social media page a specific story that I referenced before we started talking that literally made me laugh out loud. And it kind of points to your philosophy towards your healing. So I wonder if you would mind sharing that story now for our listeners.
Sure, sure. I mean, I think the philosophy towards healing can be summed up in I listen for what is needed, and I don't assume that I'm doing any of it, which doesn't mean that I don't bring all of my knowledge and skills and who I am to the table. Spiritual healing is a movement that comes from that non-dual eternal layer of reality. And the spiritual healer can reliably have access to that specific frequency of energy through meditation and through their own practice. And so I didn't know that that's what I was doing. You know, I was just getting started as a Reiki practitioner, and I love Reiki. It's a beautiful modality. And it's, in my experience, it's not just Reiki. Reiki means universal energy. So there's all sorts of forces that come in when you lay on hands with the intent to bring healing. Okay. So I was just getting started. I hadn't had very many tangible successes. I know that, you know, when I would lay on hands, I would help my friends who had like menstrual cramps or a headache, and they would have relief, and they would say that they had relief, but I didn't know. I was, you know, I had a healthy reservation, healthy
sure.
skepticism. So I was working as a waitress at the time, and a friend of mine, it was actually a bar and restaurant, and she had just been complaining of having all of these stomach issues and you know, lower body, pelvic, having weird stuff with food. And she went to the doctor, and she tried so many different things, and she'd been on medication, and she just, you know, and she was tired all the time. She just couldn't figure it out. And so I said, okay, well, nothing seems to be helping. I don't know if this will help, but why don't I come over and give you a Reiki session? I didn't charge her any money. I mean, it was literally just like, let's just try it.
Sure.
And so I went over to her apartment. I didn't have a table. We just laid her down on the bed, and I didn't do anything fancy. You know, I didn't direct the energy in my mind. I just stayed connected to the feeling of the warmth and the vibration and the tingling. And I opened my heart, and all I did was I just poured in love into this woman. And that's all I did. And I just did a full body treatment, all parts of the body. And I had actually been used to producing some spectacular results because I have the ability to project a lot of energy through this body. And so with other people, I had made them see purple and made the, you know, like I had done some fancy stuff, and I was not trusting the process. But with this time, I just very simply just let it flow, and it was very gentle. I just sort of had the instinct to be very gentle and light with my touch. And then afterwards, we were talking in the kitchen, and she was just like, man, you know, when my stomach's upset, all I can do is I just want to eat like fettuccine Alfredo and French fries and fried things. And I'm like, I get it. I totally get it. And I said, well, why don't you just try making yourself a curry with some really fatty coconut, and put some pumpkins and some squashes in there, and some turmeric and garlic and ginger. And I had some nutritional education, but I wasn't thinking about it consciously. It was just, why don't you make this curry instead? And so it was about a week, maybe 2 weeks later, I wake up to a text message from her, and she said, "You're never going to believe this, but it was my day off and I took a shower and then I laid down on the bed. I was just relaxing and I thought that there was a hair from the shower in between my butt cheeks. But when I reached down, I pulled out a 6-inch worm, a round worm." And long story short, she took it to the doctor. They did some analysis on it, determined what kind of worm it was, got her hooked up with medication to eradicate the parasite. And later that day, she did some research on the particular type of worm. And according to the internet, the natural remedy for this particular form of parasite is to eat coconut, pumpkin, garlic, and turmeric. And, you know, she said, "I truly believe that it was the work that we did together that allowed for this diagnosis." And it's not like, you know, it's not like a worm is going to just meander out of a comfy host. So sure. It's yeah. And so, and that was just phenomenal to me. You know, it was phenomenal to me that I received the message, or I had the intuition or the instinct to tell her the precise combination of foods. I didn't do that consciously in any way, shape, or form. And I'm just so grateful that she got some help.
Right. What really struck me about that story when I read it was you had mentioned earlier on in the story that you were suffering from a little bit of a crisis of confidence sometimes. Sometimes you did great things, sometimes you didn't. But you went to give her the treatment with the thought that I'm not going to push it. I'm just going to let whatever happens, happens. If it doesn't, nothing works, and nothing works, not a big deal.
Yeah.
And to your point, that sort of surrender allowed you to open up to get whatever that information that you needed to get to pass on to her to help her with her particular situation. It's really beautiful. You look at it that way. Which is why I fell in love with that story. Yes, the worm, oh my God, right? But that story, that crisis of confidence, that opening up, the surrendering, and that channeling of that information that you needed, is specifically the exact information you needed to give to her at that point in time, I thought was really, truly inspiring and really beautiful. So thanks for sharing that story. And of course, that is the type of thing that we're all looking for. To your point earlier on, you said that you underwent this kind of existential crisis, this crisis that perhaps could have opened you up to certain things. And it's really only those folks that are at desperation, right? They were desperate to find that thing. It almost seems like when you hit rock bottom, you're desperate. That's when you suddenly are forced to open yourself to things like this. The alternative is to be allow yourself to be just surrendered. Just whatever is meant to come will come. And I've gone through the existential crisis. I've gone through the hard part, which opened up the initial door to, okay, I need to find something that's going to make me feel better. I'm not the part where I've got to learn how to surrender. I think there's a lot of us out there like that right now. All right. So you do these open sessions on a weekly basis. Is that right?
On Thursdays. Today.
Okay. So today, yeah, as we're taping this, Thursdays at, I believe it's 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Sure.
Right, so it's 9 p.m. Eastern time. And I do think I have that information as to where to go. So I will add that to my show notes so people can access it. But if you've not ever experienced a Kundalini activation process, I don't think there's anything that I would recommend more strongly. If nothing else, just to experience it for yourself and make up your mind whether it's something that you're interested in or not. Alexander, Michelle, you've given us a lot already, but is there any last few words of wisdom that you would like to impart? Is there one thing you get from this interview? What would that be?
What's coming to me the most is lean into that feeling of I don't know. The search for the spiritual is something beyond the mind. And since we're on the skeptic metaphysician show,
yes,
I would recommend you lean into that feeling of I don't know, which isn't to say you ever ignore the discernment of this isn't right for me, or this seems incomplete, or maybe this isn't, you know, but that's a feeling. It's from this place of I don't know that the miracles, the mystery can be revealed to you. And then if you're the intellectual type, then there's all kinds of yogic science that can explain the phenomena, but have the direct realization first.
Right. Perfectly stated. the show is the Skeptic Metaphysician for a very specific reason. I've always been of that. I need proof. I need to know for sure that there's something there. So if you're looking for that, this is something that does have science attached to it that you could actually look up. But I would encourage people to go into it with an open mind as opposed to just a scientific mind, because I think you might miss something if you don't. So, Alexandra, thank you so much for being on the show. I, you and I will most definitely be in contact again, because I really feel your energy. I feel the Kundalini activation process really intrigues me. I have a daughter, so sometimes it's difficult for me to attend things like this, but for sure I'm going to find a way to do it, because I'm really, really truly curious and intrigued by it. So thanks for coming on and sharing of yourself with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
And thank you, listener, for being with us today. If you'd like to connect directly with my guest, you can reach her on social media at Alex... sorry, I'm going to mess this up. Alexa... Alex... Can you say it for me?
Alexabracadabra?
That's it. Alexabracadabra. It's so easy and yet so difficult for me to say. I don't understand why. And that's with two A's at the end. Or alexandra.michelle.122 on Facebook. I've laid in direct links to those in my show notes in case you prefer not to have to run and get a pen and a piece of paper. Well, I think I just dated myself in a pretty big way by saying that just now. But she also has a YouTube channel that you should absolutely check out if you want to learn more about her and the KAP. That direct link is in the show notes as well. She does offer, as I mentioned, that virtual KAP sessions every Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. It's 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you'd like to experience it for yourself, cannot recommend it highly enough. As always, please don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode. Don't forget, you can send me a voice message on speakpipe.com/skepticmetaphysician. As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, questions, or feedback on the show or the guests. And I love sharing people's stories. Would love to share yours too. So please feel free to reach out if you'd like to come on the show. You can join me on Facebook at The Skeptic Metaphysician, or email me directly. That address, along with links to my social media platforms and SpeakPipe access, are all on the show notes as well. Last thing, and you know what's coming, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd sincerely appreciate you throwing the show a 5-star rating and leave a review if you like the show. Really, honestly, goes a long way towards getting the show in front of more people who might benefit from hearing the stories we share on the show. That's all for now. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll see you again on the next episode of The Skeptic Metaphysician. Until then, take care.